There's several differences between what I believe and what I teach and what most people teach and believe. One or two differences.
Holy hyperbole.
One of the major differences is in regards to the purpose of the law. Even in the language of our thoughts, we feel that the reason the law exists is to make so that you can become better, so that you can become something, so that you'll have some place of standing. But if any of you have heard, we teach the purpose of the law is to prove your total inability to do anything that's of value. So therefore, it's even in our thought language and what we say and how we respond to stimulus. We secretly believe, but more importantly, we secretly wish that the purpose of the law would be to make us good. Now the scriptures say, what serveth the law? They ask the question. And then in the English, in the King James translation, it says, it was added because of transgression. And so in our minds, when we hear that translation, it sounds like, well, somebody started transgressing, and therefore God had to add the law. No, that's not what it means. It was there to reveal the transgression. Now what we're going to talk about tonight, hopefully we'll see that, you can see that more clearly, and you can see it emotionally. I don't know about any of you, anybody else, I'm sure I'm the only one this is true. But for me, in my own condemnation of self, the most difficult arena of my life has been sex, sexuality in general. Now, I'm sure that none of you are in that position. But, so I was in Highland Park cafeteria, as a matter of fact.
Having sex.
And I was walking through the line before I was so rudely interrupted several times.
At Highland Park cafeteria.
And I was thinking about my own experience and experiences with regard to sexuality. And why in the world did they have such an incredible hold on me? Why was I still prisoner, in a very, very real sense, to stimulus or stimuli that occurred 40 years ago? And I'm sure none of you are still prisoner to any of these stimuli that have occurred in your past. But just in case you are, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Raw sex and what it means. Now, think back as a child. As a very young child, there was absolutely no awareness of your own sexuality. You know, then pretty soon you started to think, well, I got a little thingy down there and she doesn't or something. But there was that wasn't sexual awareness. It was only a physical awareness. But at some point in time, in varying stages, depending on your own precociousness, you became extremely aware of sex. Now, some of you, that was very, very young. It could have been as early as 2 or 3 or 4. For some of you, it was later. There's no merit whether it was early or late. It's just that's what happened to you. And that's the way you were designed to be. If you believe that God, that you were chosen in Him from before your mother's womb, then every stimulus and every step along the way had to be of God. Now, so this awareness soon became curiosity, mostly with self in the earliest stages. And then the awareness, the curiosity, expanded to experimentation. And I don't want to have a little tee-hee game here of telling how they played doctor, but when you were a very small child, there was some degree of first awareness, then curiosity, and then experimentation. Didn't have a control on you yet. It was just sort of, you know, you've seen kids when they're very young, they think nothing more of talking about their sexual activity or their sexual organs than they do about eating a peanut butter sandwich. It's just what it is. Now, I can only, and I was being facetious earlier when I said that, you know, I don't know about any of you, maybe you didn't go through this, and maybe sex isn't a problem for you. But I know that it is. Because I know that there's nothing that I have experienced that isn't common to every one of you. We've only are talking about degrees of difference. Now, at some point after the experimentation, when it was simply an innocent activity with regard to no more, you know, there was no more difference between it than comparing, you know, what color hair you had, or, I mean, it was not emotionally charged. And it didn't become emotionally charged until sometime around puberty. Now, what happens at puberty? Your body chemistry changes, and your adrenal system and your hormonal system begins to release hormones into the system so that certain changes take place in the body. Male develops hair, female develops breasts, you know, I won't categorize, and the woman begins to bleed. The point is that at a point in, and I want you to see this as not a, if you could just divorce your mind a minute, see this as no different than growing a fingernail. Take the emotionally charged arena out of it. So you became not only curious, experimenting, now it's grabbed you because of hormonal responses within your body. Now a whole new set of circumstances enters in. Now you begin to evaluate. Now you begin imagery. And of course, now you begin masturbation. Now, whether or not you masturbate to climax is immaterial. If you don't, you're stupid. I mean, if you masturbate and don't masturbate to climax, that's like, you know, that's guilt without sex. What? But the point of it is that now they're in the, and I'm going through all this, and I'm sure all of you, you all know all this, but I'm leading to something, because I want it to be seen without the emotional charge, the emotional impact that it has on you. Once the masturbation process starts, then by definition, along with masturbation, comes imagery. Comes the propensity as a child to want to see your mother and father, or to want to watch somebody, or to window peep, to look. And whether it's by accident or by design, during the time in which you are in that experimental stage, I can remember a few instances that still blow my mind. You know, it was something that was so wonderful, that looked so incredibly good, that was so wonderful, that something happened in my memory. Something happened in my mind that charged that experience or that sensation or that observation, and it's etched in, it's etched forever in my brain. Not just one, many. Now, what happens? Why, if you pull yourselves out of this, why should the sexual activity have that much power?
Epinephrine.
That's right.
What?
What happens, the moment that you are sexually aroused, your adrenal system releases a particular hormone called epinephrine. And that hormone works in a complicated way in your brain to charge that memory so that it's engraved no less than a graven image on your brain cells. Now,
you remember good stuff and you don't remember bad stuff.
Right.
No, because what you're talking about can just as easily be negative imagery as positive imagery.
Well, but you will translate it.
Well,
I don't want to get into a discussion about that, but you'll translate positive or negative, and you'll always translate it so that it ends up benefiting the organism. At least your perception of it will benefit the organism. Now we get into sadomasochism, all kinds of stuff. But your perception as a human, as a hunk of protoplasm, benefits you. Whether that benefit to anybody else looks like it's destroying you. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, now, every one of you have a board of elders, have hundreds of those images in your mind that you perceive, no matter how free you think you are, you perceive those images as an enemy to your spiritual life.
Where do those elders come from? Religion?
No, it comes because you're designed that way. God designed you that way.
So it doesn't matter if you're religious.
No, and the point is that no matter how religious you are, no matter how pious you appear to the public, no matter how well you can put on the mask, no matter how many navigator meetings you go to, you are controlled by those images. It's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, people who aren't religious see it as just their super ego kind of a thing, right? I mean, it's the idea that you shouldn't be doing this, which comes ingrained.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's...
Or do you have any kind of religious...
Yeah, religious, or really, this has nothing to do with religion. But my point is that the people... Huh?
Why is it there then?
It's there to show you can't fulfill the law.
So the law is ingrained in your heart? Is that the law is not the board of elders.
Forget the board of elders. Forget I said that. I want you to concentrate for a moment in time on the times when you want to be sexually aroused. What images go to your head? What construct is there that comes from memory, from things you've seen, from a book you've read, from a dirty movie, from any thing? There's hundreds of them for most people. And your mind is like a computer, and it ranges back and forth. And if you happen to be masturbating, it'll range back and forth until you lock onto one that meets the needs of that appropriate moment until you can have a climax by it. Now, maybe I'm the only one that does this. Maybe all the rest... If I have... If we understand that the walk demands to be totally in the moment, to a totally abandon self, you understand that that's the basis of everything I teach here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then to totally abandon self, except in sexuality where you get into a point where you get so totally into self that you revert to past images gone by, you don't think that's an enemy to the abandonment of self?
Quiet.
Well, that's the way I meant. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about any old-time religious thing about saying that God is going to punish you for thinking dirty thoughts. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that the end result is that we would end up in a position of total and complete freedom, which is the abandonment of self.
Well, that's clear, too.
Okay? So I didn't mean religiously, like, you know, like Baptist church stuff. Okay. Now, the reason that those, that we are constructed in the way that we are, you can't, I don't, you know, most of you have had a lot of sexual experience in relationship to, well, some of you haven't, never mind.
To nuns.
To nuns. Yeah, you've had a lot of relationship to none.
None tonight, none last night.
Yeah. But, you know, you can't remember, you can only remember the really, you know, you can't remember most of it. You know, for some reason you can only remember something that was a trigger mechanism that released these epinephrine, this hormone into your system that caused that image to be locked into your memory. Now, I believe that we started in Groves. We started the Groves process. I believe that the end result of total freedom, if you desire not to be under the control of anything. Amen. It took me a long time to desire that. Because there's a whole lot of things that I like to be under the control of. But if you can honestly desire not to be under the control of anything, then there's ways of freedom. And that's what we want to talk about. Do all of you understand what I'm talking about? You either project yourself in fantasy to someone that you haven't had, or you revert to a past experience or a visualization or imagery to something that was enjoyable.
Which means you never have sex.
So if you're married, you're never making love to your wife because you're always someplace else. Oh, I'm saying that. I'm saying that. Let's
talk about that.
I'm saying that. Let's see that the ultimate sexualization or sexual experience is to be able to give yourself totally to that moment without regard to past or future. I think that's the point. I think you look at those trees and tell me which one you haven't lain under. Rather than, I mean, what I'm talking about is something that's so rare that most of us don't have it in our experience.
Because can't emotions come in without a mental picture?
That's what it's the same kind of thing I've said. That your emotions, the limitation of that emotion, both negative and positive, is your experience. So most, you know, how can I say? All the image. We think that the images are something that we hold on to. They're like the monkey trap. It's a banana in your mind. Then you've got your hand on it, and you think that point is keeping, shut up, John, is keeping you. You think that point, that imagery is what's going to give you the rush or give you the fulfillment. You don't think about this. It's just, it goes there automatically. But it's that which is preventing you from the fullness of the experience. Well, then you can participate in what the total experience is intended to be. Everything that you and I have thought was a positive, fetishes, you know, all the little fantasy trips, all the little dealies, all of those things are not things that enhance the experience in totality. They're the things that block the experience from being fully participated in at that moment. Because it's an image which is less than the perfection. And it's not done, you don't sit around and think about this, this is the way your mind works. Your mind, remember the cliche all your life that, you know, well, you only use 10% of your mind, and if anybody could use 20% of their mind, then be a real genius? Well, we've talked about this before, but that's not true. What happens is that your mind at any given instant is fully utilized. And every time you think a new thought, it increases the protein content of that neuron. And it's the protein content of the neuron that defines the capacity for the electrical impulse of the thought. So that the more you think new thoughts, It's an exponential curve. It provides you the capacity to think that much more new thought. Well, it's the same, it's true in sexuality or in any of our experience as a human organism. If we have blocked that experience at an a priori point, then we keep reverting to that. It's what it is in the spirit is we're continually going back to Egypt for sustenance. The purpose of climax, in a very real sense, has nothing to do with reproduction. The purpose of climax is to rip open the window of time to enter heaven. And if you have been satisfied with a position outside the window, then you can practice till hell freezes over and you'll never get in there. And it has nothing to do with regard to experience or to how many times you've done it in the past. In fact, most of those, if you're honest, have denigrated the experience because you've been desensitized by each other. You know, the husband can't get it up and he doesn't satisfy you anymore. You're desensitized by the experience itself. It's because it's only of the flesh. Therefore, by definition, it has to be continually denigrating. And if anybody in here tells me it isn't, then I'm, you know, then we'll start worshiping you. And that's what it means. What, you know, we're back to the point that the true marriage is only the marriage that's first joined at the spirit, second the soul, and third at the body. If it's, you can't get there from here if you don't do that. But the spirit point is never time dependent. It's never anything dependent. You have to mix, and that's what's set before us. And the only way, if you've started out in the flesh or in the soul, to get to the spirit is the cross. Now, the only way that that can happen is the cross has to reach down to the very depths of your past experience so that you're not dependent, because you don't sit around and choose to have something excite you. You know, I could go, you know, what I know about all of you. You don't choose to have those things excite you. So what happens? How is that done? Well, it's done by only one way. And that's by apprehending the spiritual meaning of the offerings in Leviticus. And I know that may sound real religious to you. But it cannot be done by any other way than the apprehension of the offering of Christ. There are five levels of offering. Remember we've talked. There are five major categories. The burnt offering is the highest. Then it goes to the meat offering, then the peace offering, then the sin offering, then finally the trespass offering. Then within that category, there's all the votive offerings and free will and all that, but that's another subject. Under every one of those offerings, there are at least three and sometimes seven subcategories of offering. And they represent the highest understanding of the apprehension of Christ is seeing the burnt offering and its fulfillment. The lowest is the trespass offering, which is simply a handful of flour. 99.99% of Christianity, and unfortunately most of you in this room, have only apprehended the lowest class of the trespass offering. You have no concept of the higher classes of the trespass offering. You have no concept of the sin offering. You have no concept of the peace offering. You have no concept of the meat offering. And you have definitely no concept of the burnt offering. Now, it may sound strange to connect raw sex with the offerings, but that's the place that it's tested. That's why you were designed like you are. And it can only be apprehended by seeing the fullness of what Christ has already offered. By totally, when we take the bread and the wine, discerning the Lord's body, none of ours. And that cross has to go down to the deepest recesses of your attempts at experience. Now, how does this happen? Well, that's what will be about. I wanted to give you at least a foretaste, some foreplay with regard, some reason for wanting to study the offerings, because it looks on the surface to be boring. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how this process goes, the moment guilt has entered in, and if some of you are without guilt in this area, praise God. But I know most of you that you're not. The moment guilt enters in, it makes the offering of none effect. Do you understand that?
You mean guilt in any sense, not just sexually?
Yeah. Well, but, you know, it's like, yeah, it's mostly related to sex. And it, by design, and we'll see that. But hear this. In terms of the apprehension of these offerings, the moment that guilt enters in because of something you have done, then you have denied the lowest class of the offering, and you can go no further.
If you really believe in offering, then you wouldn't have the guilt.
That's right. And what I'm saying is guilt is the lowest class of the trespass offering.
You mean there's an offering just for guilt?
Well, guilt, well, you'll see. But by the apprehension of each of these levels of offerings is the vehicle by which God has designed to totally free our minds. And whether it be sex or anything else, to enter into a new awareness of living. I mean, that's what it's there for. Now, I just start to, when all this stuff began to, you know, I understood in principle the types of offering, but when I began to study each of the different classes of offerings and to see how they reflect on our behavior in terms of how we respond to each other and respond to the world, and I mean, it makes me cry to think how little we see and therefore how little we know of Christ. But the only way out of this, by definition, is love. And then there's the freedom of confession, of openness. The confession doesn't mean, you see, that's another word. We think of the word confess, and we think, okay, I confess when I've done something wrong. Doesn't mean, you remember what confess means. It means to speak the same thing. It means to speak alongside of. It means to see as God sees and speak as God speaks. But the point of confession, we've got a long ways to go, folks. But my point to you is that we have to, you have to, the test of whether or not the freedom in this arena exists is you're speaking of it as openly as you would anything else. Mm-hmm. And that's the laying down your life. Because the thing that's, that we've seen so often that you think is the darkest to you will be that which frees your brother. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, thy soul, and thy mind. As we apprehend these offerings, we'll see that when the offerings were cut up, and we see every part of the offering, the legs, the head, the innards, the fat, the, you know, on and on, every one of those parts of the offering represents an arena or a type or a look at the heart, the soul, the mind, the walk, the activity. So, you know, part of me, when I was thinking about talking about it tonight, I want you to first to see that the purpose of the law isn't so that you can be good. The purpose of the law is so you can see your need for the offering. And so, therefore, once you see that, guilt has completely and forever lost its hold on you. Now, we still I still secretly believe that if I couldn't feel guilty about it, I wouldn't enjoy it. Now, that's the area that I want you to be aware of. The things that you feel guilty about. Now, guilt, you don't have to go on the big guilt trip about the flagellation and all that stuff. It's the things that you know, that you just wouldn't openly talk about. Now, in this area, it's obviously, it's unbelievable advantage to be married. It's probably the only area in which there's an advantage.
I wouldn't say that.
There's a tax advantage.
There's a tax advantage, that's true.
But I watch you start.
But I want us to open this area of our minds so there's not just something that's hidden away, so that you can literally walk on the high, these are areas of the high places, if we could each say, I will not to be under the control of anything. And I desire not to be under the control of anything. I don't, maybe some of you like to be under the control. And so in that regard, you know, they that wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. Now, I'm almost tempted to call for a fast, but a fast from any, so that these things will, the only thing that a fast does, whether it's hunger or whatever, or food or whatever, it makes you see more clearly. You know, the fast from sex, you know, before they saw the law at Mount Sinai, they called for fast for 3 days from sex. Called for sex. I've had people tell me they didn't have any fantasies. Well, they're either dead or lying or they don't see. I want you to visualize, pretend, see yourself as a small child. Maybe some of you might have actually had this experience, but I've known people that had this experience and it locked them in forever. They saw either their mother or their father when they were very young. In some cases, in one case I know of, they saw their mother having a sexual relationship with somebody that was, you know, while they were in the room. And it locked this into their mind so strongly that it affected that person's total ability to respond as a sexual being forever. You know, the only freedom from it is the offering. Now, every one of you have had some kind of an experience. You know, I told you during Groves when I was a little kid, I crawled in bed with my mother and put my hand on her. And that's locked forever in my mind. I was probably 4 or 5 years old. Don't send this tape to my mother. No, she knows it.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. How are you?
She really could be.
Well, but every one of you, now for some of you, that became so odious that it's blocked from your memory. That's why some of you can't remember your childhood. Because there's one or more of those kinds of things back there that would, you know, but the freedom from that is what this is about. It's the seeing the fullness of the offering. Do you understand the relationship, Ellis, to the offerings? See, just somebody look at Leviticus 1:8-9 for a minute. Okay, read 8 and 9.
And the priest, Aaron's sons, shall lay the parts, the head.
Well, read 7, I'm sorry. Where he cuts them up.
The sons of Aaron, the priest, shall put fire upon the altar and lay the wood in order upon the fire. And the priest, Aaron's sons, shall lay the parts, the head, and the fat in order upon the wood that is on the fire, which is upon the altar. But his inwards and his legs shall he wash in water, and the priest shall burn all on the altar to be a burnt sacrifice, an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Lord.
Okay, now, what we just studied yesterday in bananas, remember, is that Isaac, the sacrifice of Isaac, was a burnt offering. Mm-hmm. And so it included, you know, in the other offerings, and many of the other offerings, there's different things done with it. They're burned outside the camp, but the burnt offering is the offering of full acceptance, and it means every aspect of it was accepted. Every aspect of the inward. The inwards had to be first washed in water. Now you are clean by the washing of water of the word. Every part of the sacrifice, the burnt offering, was perfectly acceptable, and it was a sweet savor. Now, that's what you are. Not by but because of who you contain. You are that sweet savor, and every part of you is accepted. But you can't apprehend that yet, because you can't get there from here. You have to see each element of it. Sometimes your mind apprehends it, and you say, oh, praise God. But God is sick and tired of you praising for a season, or for a day, and then murmuring for a season. Or being joyful for a moment, and depressed for an hour. And the only reason that you are is that you have not appropriated these offerings.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
And a lot of it has to do with sexuality. Your perception of it, your response to it, the stimulus that it engendered in you at a very young age. You know, and I'm not talking about anything. My God, my life is sexuality. But I didn't choose it that way. I mean, most of our reasons for wanting to change something that we think is bad, that we've made that decision, has nothing to do with really wanting to change. It has to do with wanting to improve our own self-esteem, even either in our own eyes or in others' eyes.
Back to guilt. There's guilt about being that way because it's judged wrong.
Right.
And if you're that way, you're bad, wrong, guilty. So if you change that, you'll be good, right.
Right. And it goes back fundamentally to Azazel, to this thing. Mm-hmm. Because you asked me the other night what Azazel's price was. What satisfied Azazel? Death satisfied Azazel. I mean, we can talk about all kinds of other things in response to it, but fundamentally it was death that satisfied Azazel.
Yeah, death of God.
And the sacrifice was accepted. Now, but that ultimately has satisfied every demand on you. So you're no longer under good and evil anymore. It's gone forever. But your mind doesn't see that yet. Yeah, but I want you to taste the freedom. That's the meaning of the offerings is freedom. But the meaning of even not understanding the offerings is freedom. Don't ever try to change yourself. And don't ever allow someone else to put a guilt trip on you. Don't let them do it. You cannot, if you have the strength to change a bad, what you think of as a bad habit, or something that you want to be different, well, what you don't need God. You're accepted as you are. Now, what's exciting about being accepted as you are is that there's all kinds of anticipation that what you are is going to be 10,000 times more exciting, more fulfilling, more everything than you've ever dreamed it being. Once the barriers that have been placed there by chemicals, natural chemicals in your mind, have been torn down. Just think about it. Heaven is right here. The perfect joy of all eternity is right next to you. Now, sex is the way they get in that door. But not sex based on anything after the flesh, which sounds like a contradiction. But I want you to start being, you know, I hate to think of that we have to have another Groves weekend, but we probably do. But the...
Groves update.
Groves update.
Groves 2, the what?
The sequel.
Groves 2, the sequel. Oh, no.
The movie.
But if we were free enough, if we saw clearly enough, and we saw that your own experiences have only one function, and that's to help someone else, that they have nothing to do with you.
There's the anticipation of, in me, that kind of not confession for confession's sake, but that sharing does that.
No.
You know, that not because it, because you can see that it where you see somebody else really snared, that it could lose its hold on you.
One of the things about the offerings that is mightily significant is that, again, the lowest class of offering is called a trespass offering. And the trespass offering is a continual offering. It's done daily, several times during the day. And it differs from the sin offering in that the trespass offering is for what the organism does. But the sin offering is for the organism itself.
What it is.
What it is. Remember, we've always said that sin isn't what you do, it's what you are. And there's some really serious mistranslations in the New Testament, because the New Testament clarifies the distinction between sin, which is singular, the word, and trespass, which are trespasses. But you're designed to do trespasses. So the test, so that you will know that you can't do the law. I mean, you're designed to fail. But you're designed to fail internally as well. So when we take the bread and the wine, the bread and the wine, the Passover ceremony prefigured all offerings. And it included all offerings. And so, it's like...
This is like the handful of meal. Here.
This is the whole... Well, no, it's more than that. It's the whole, both of the, in effect, both of these are the fullness of the offerings. And it's the fullness of the communion, where, and by definition, you understand the altar. If we present ourselves, this sounds ludicrous to the natural mind, but when you present yourself at the altar as the living sacrifice, the altar is God's table. It's where God eats from. And when we do the peace offering, which is the offering that's symbolized in communion, we are eating with God, the one offering. We are consuming the flesh. When Jesus said, "I have meat to eat that you know not of," he was talking about the very offering, the peace offering, which is typified here in the communion. And the idea, the fullness of the idea of what it means to eat is what and where you get sustenance. Now, I'm convinced that there is a, in Revelation destroys epinephrine.
It supersedes it.
Swallows it up.
How?
It's like an acid.
That's a good point. It's like if you have a base, if something is basic, and you add acid to it, it makes the pH balance equal. It balanced.
Then there's an actual physical.
I think there is. I can't prove it.
Because
if it nullifies, it takes away what epinephrine's have done.
Right. It takes the control of it away from you. I mean, it's no longer that imagery. It's there, but it no longer controls you.
It's like blanking a tape, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't blank the tape.
No.
But it makes it so that it's no longer a control.
Forms a new path.
Right. It's not. It's, remember when you studied. Remember when we studied, especially in bananas, the pineal body and what. Well, what happens is that a new path of thought is defined.
You say often we are designed to fail. It ran through my mind. Do we fail because of the fall? You know, originally we're probably perfect, but then.
Well, remember that man, Adam was created innocent. And he was intended, because of the justice of God, to transform that innocence to holiness by the things and the tests that would come against him. We don't know how many tests he passed, if any, but we know he failed, the biggie. Christ came along the same line. Christ was born innocent. He went through the passage and completed the way. He didn't lean on his own arm of understanding. So he, in all his ways, he acknowledged him. So he completed that path. Now that's the only life that we give breath to then, is that Christ in us, the hope of glory. We don't give breath any longer to the sensory perception, which is Adamic, because it by nature fell.
Yeah, and it continues to.
It's all it can do.
I like when, I've said this before, but it really hit me one day when Sammy Ventura said something about it. If Adam hadn't done it, I would have. You know, it just struck me. That's true.
I'm sort of seeing the picture that the river is free to flow wherever through here. But the nature of man, the nature of the mind, is to channel, to dam, to divert, and keep returning back to little tide pools and eddies.
And each one of those eddies, each one of those is every time there's an eddy or a little pool, It manifests itself externally in self-seeking. And that's why sexuality is the there's some people that experienced what it means to truly give in sex without regard. I mean, because if agape is in sexuality, then that's what, you know, then it has no, then you're only concerned with giving. But not the sick giving that's manifested in masochism. Capisce? Well, all I want you to see when we take the bread and the wine tonight is that I don't expect us to understand all the offerings and all the details, but simply to know that the offering that's represented in what we are about to partake of was complete to the very depth and core of your being. And as you apprehend it in your mind, the meaning of it, then that's the instrument of the renewal of the mind. And so no matter what it is, and no matter what position you are in this moment, what's set before you is greater joy, greater freedom, greater understanding, greater revelation, as we begin this process of openness. I want your mind to there are areas of some of your minds that you haven't seen for years, and the reason you haven't seen them is because of shame. Remember, the man and the woman were naked but not ashamed. Well, a body should be naked but not ashamed. And the word ashamed there means publicly disgraced. So it has the connotation of being made known but without disgrace.
Yeah. Shame is always a public kind of a thing.
Right. Now, the way that process takes place is as with Christ, now we are in a position to despise the shame.
I was thinking it's kind of like being lost in the woods and walking around in a circle trying to reach a point that's somewhere else. And the more you walk in the circle, the deeper the path that you're walking becomes, and the more likely you are to stay there,
stay
because
on
it's a
path.
Safe path.
Right.
It's always safer to stay on the path than to get off and go somewhere new.
Right. And there weren't any bears on that path. Mm-hmm. So, get off the path is what the lesson is. You don't have to play these games anymore. Just open yourself up completely. And pray that it's... Believe me, none of this can be done by our own strength. It's all done by the Holy Spirit. Not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. It's you expressing the need, which opens, which creates the vacuum in this thing we call mind, which allows the Spirit to come in and renew. Okay, everybody take the bread.
Let me say one thing. It's along the lines of what you're talking about. And I can see, the necessity of seeing, going through the sacrifices level by level and seeing all of that. But at the same time, and I think you said this, I see the necessity of not having to do that also. I mean, it's like it's either complete in a moment, because you can't get back into line upon line of, progressive revelation or
just
whatever.
It just adds to.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's almost a paradox that you just have to hold there, because it's like there's apprehending it, but also at any moment of abandonment, it's completely...
It's completely apprehended.
Yeah, it's completely apprehended.
Well, that's the prayer with Philippians, that I may apprehend that which I am apprehended by.
Yeah.
And that's instantaneous in Revelation. Mm-hmm. So it's not... That's a good point. I mean, we don't have to sit around and study all of these offerings.
That prayer is the same one as see it, even as we're seeing it.
Right.
At the same time, we want to.
The only reason we want to apprehend, in one very real sense, the only reason we want to study the offerings is so that we can share them with someone else. Because it'll be an instrument of freedom to the church as a whole, if they could but see. I was thinking about, how in the world do you talk about this stuff? Because, it's taken us years to be able to get to the point of being able to understand what offerings are. Most of what we call or know of the body of Christ is still cowering in Egypt under the blood. None of the offerings are understood. They can't be understood in Egypt. They can only be understood once you've left Egypt and in the wilderness. And so, how do you communicate? How do you talk about it to anyone?
Right?
Anybody else? The thing that I was... There have been occasions when, for whatever reason, probably it's this desensitization that we've talked about, that after I'd gone with somebody for an extended period of time, that there was a ritual that had to take place. And it was the incantations. It was the, it's portrayed out there. There's a movie I saw with Clint Eastwood that for some reason comes to mind where...
That one where he's a cop in New Orleans?
I don't remember if it's New Orleans, but there's a deal with this killer is a woman, and she's killing the guys that raped her.
Oh,
I remember that, The Enforcer.
Yeah, The Enforcer.
I don't know. Anyway, but there's a scene where this one really geeky guy... And for some reason, it's locked in my memory that he has a prostitute.
In Las Vegas.
I don't know where it is, but she has to say exactly the right words, and then if it's interrupted by a phone call, and she has to start over and say, the exact. Now I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I love to have the words said. There's no. My thing isn't visual necessarily. My sexuality comes in an audio deal. And each one of us probably is maybe some or parts of all kinds of it.
Yeah.
But it is, we're all fortunate that it hasn't been to the point of total desensitization, and that it isn't, maybe it is for some, that it isn't total ritual. There I mean, because we're talking major time boring. I mean, when I'm really honest with myself, the reason that I've never married is down to this, is that I got bored with sex with a woman after a period of time. And she was just, I'd rather masturbate. She just was boring, no matter how beautiful she was. Well, but my point is that I don't think I'm any different than anybody else.
That's what I was saying.
Because what happens for most of the people in my experience is that whether or not you've ever gone with that many women or not, or that many men, you've ended up being bored, but for some reason or other didn't want to say it because you thought it would hurt their feelings, or you thought it would threaten your relationship, or you opted for security. The only thing that I've never opted for security in a relationship, obviously, I don't have a relationship, but I think, I don't care what I don't care what position man is in, he is always, or woman, they have always ended up bored sexually. Now, and in order to combat that boredom, they play games in their minds, and projections, and... Can everybody take the bread?
Well, yeah, I just want to say that for me, a major counterfeit has been exposed to that. Because if the window or door to heaven is the desired end in sex, and I'm sure that it is, and if inside there are images and elders, it's this ritualistic, religious, high place kind of magic to go through. To go through the door to heaven, if that's what it's all about, then it is. Then that's the counterfeit.
Yeah, I find it interesting, since you mentioned pornography, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to speak to that. That pornography, in the context of what we're talking about within the temple, is the real religion. Yes. Which blows you away.
Yeah. What happened?
That which they are against is what
you're talking about. No, the idea, the writ. All pornography is, by definition, ritualized. Mm-hmm. That is the religion.
That's the real religion.
That's their real religion.
Who's?
Well, the world's.
The world.
Anybody's.
Because it's ritualized.
But it's the internal giving breath to or worshiping towards the end of whatever you want to call it, climax, heaven, nirvana.
The flesh working its way through the door to heaven.
Yeah, but it's in the very real sense, it's being satisfied with second best.
Amen.
And so it's the same kind of thing that we've mentioned in all these other arenas, that the areas that you think after the flesh that have brought you pleasure have only been a down payment on what's set before you if the cross and the offerings have done their perfect work. Because the end result of all this must be pure joy, or we're wasting our time.
I was, before we started tonight, I said, this is going to sound so religious, but my request is that I learn to be content where I am, i.e. single. The fact that I am single is perfect for me to see this counterfeit bullshit about the flesh trying to work its way into heaven.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, but the real thing, though, is that whatever condition we are, it's to be shared, to be exposed, to be spoken of freely without shame, in order that the body can be edified. Amen? No, I think that if we would abstain, not to be religious or righteous or something, but abstain so that certain things could be clarified, that we could, there would be a lot of things that we would understand far better in the light of all we've talked about tonight. So anyway, can everybody take the bread? Just know that the bread represents everything that is apprehended, the bread and the wine together, represent everything that has apprehended you. So it's totally and completely discernment of his body. Now, we apprehend a little. We see through the glass darkly. But soon face to face. The same night in which he was betrayed, he took the bread. He broke it earlier. And he said, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who bringeth forth bread from the earth." He said, "Take, eat. This is my body. By these stripes you are healed. Body, mind, soul, spirit." We need new matzo.
That is bad.
I like it.
He took the cup. He gave thanks. See, that's where they get the custom in the Middle East. They got the dealy wrong, and so. He took the cup and gave thanks, saying, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who bringeth forth
greatest
fruit of all."
I did it wrong.
Boo. With it many
a
story. I don't know.
I swear, that's how they get revision.
I said, "This is my blood, which is shed for you, for the remission of sin." To life.
I love you.